recorded live from Orlando, Florida and Nashville, Tennessee, you're listening to The Dapper Danielle Show, starring Ian Wilson, Clarence Kelly, and now, here's your host, the one and only, The Dapper Danielle.
Something, okay, so just random thing I thought was really funny. The Energizer Bunny is on Wikipedia as a Star Wars character.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, why though? It's because really that means ridiculous. He has to be canon somewhere within the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, so the Energizer Bunny appeared in an advertisement in 1994. And so there's a whole... For anybody who's not, like, chronically online or a Star Wars nerd, there is a website called Wikipedia. It has all of the Star Wars information you could ever imagine or dream of.
It's been so helpful for me to be able to, like, find spellings of characters' names. Like, it's been great.
The only reason I found this is because I was looking up, in the last episode, I was trying to look up Star Wars musicians when you mentioned the radio, and I was thinking of, like, Max Rebo and his band and stuff. And for some reason, the Energizer Bunny was in the list of Star Wars musicians. So, he appeared in an ad, he fights Darth Vader, he beats Darth Vader by pulling the batteries out of his lightsaber. It's really goofy.
I love that made such a... impression that it was like, okay, he's now canon in the Star Wars universe, throw him into Wikipedia. Yep. That's hilarious.
Exactly. That's all I wanted to share. We can get started.
Yes, well, welcome everybody to another episode of the Dapper Danielle Show. Thank you so much for being here. I'm the Dapper Danielle, and I'm joined by Clarence Kelly and Ian Wilson, my brothers. And we're going to talk about a little more in depth. This is part two to our adventures in Disneyland. Last episode, we covered a little bit of news. We covered, actually... a lot of information we weren't planning on. We talked about food and restrooms over in Disneyland. Two very important things, and some things that are drastically different between Disneyland and Disney World. Again, we are Disney Worlders, y'all. I live here locally in the Orlando area, and Clarence and Ian live in Nashville, Tennessee, so they are... we're a little bit closer. They come down and visit me. And this was our first time going to Disneyland in quite some time. Clarence and I were there semi-recently last year in October. So it's another year later we went back and we got to experience some other things. It was a lot of firsts for us. And a lot of those firsts actually occurred in the attraction world. So we're going to get into that here in just a moment. So we didn't really touch about this very much in the last episode because we got a little preoccupied with our other subjects. And so in this episode, I really want to focus on attractions, entertainment, some things we loved, I want to know y'all's opinions on some of these. Oh, and I guess really the first question I had was when it comes to attractions, we have some very different attractions between Disney World and Disneyland. Y'all, was there any in particular that you're just like, this was my favorite attraction we went on while we were in Disneyland and California Adventure?
Two that we have at, or we had at Disneyland that we definitely do not have in Disney World yet that I really enjoyed were the Cars attraction, the Radiator Springs one. That was very enjoyable. Just a lot of fun. Just felt like just a classic Disney ride of like, yes, it may not be the fastest ride on property. It may not be go upside down. It may not, but just... you could ride it again and again and again and just have a really, really good time on it. Kind of like Slinky Dog Dash, just very enjoyable attraction to do. So really liked that one. And then I enjoyed the Matterhorn as well, too. I don't know how to describe it. It was a very enjoyable experience. It was not a... smooth experience. It's a very jerky ride, obviously. Very painful in some ways. So it's not like Cars where you're just like, I'm just relaxed, having a great time the whole time I'm on this attraction. There's kind of a, okay, wow, we're gonna go off the side of the mountain here for sure.
We did have more of those moments. Instead of like just normal screams, we had a lot of whoa, ow, oh, ow. Yeah. A lot of those moments while we're on Matterhorn.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I would say really fun. And I think fun, too, just because I have never ridden the Matterhorn before, so it's always fun when you first ride an attraction. You have that sense of, you know, kind of discovery that you're seeing all the ride, all the jump scares, everything kind of happening at once. Jacqueline, my wife, was not aware that there was going to be any type of Yeti, abominable snowman type interaction on the ride. She was just like, oh, we're just on the mountain. I kind of knew that. Obviously, there's the like big footprints outside at different places kind of around the Matterhorn saying like this footprint was discovered. So I was like, there's got to be something here kind of going on. But that was very fun. And arguably, maybe the ride wasn't as enjoyable from like a track perspective, but the animatronic slash character interaction, arguably better than Expedition Everest as far as like, wow, I'm scared that the Yeti is going to get me kind of on the Matterhorn. So very good, especially for being an older ride. I know it seems like it's been updated, you know, obviously in the last couple of years, but very enjoyable experience on the Matterhorn.
And y'all, I did not preface or give them any warning about any of this attraction. We just went straight into it. And I don't know, maybe it's just one of those things of like, I've been on it. I just forgot there for a moment that you guys had never experienced it. Clarence, we didn't get to go on this attraction when you were with me, right?
No. So when he popped up and he's like, welcome to the Himalayas, and like trying to give me a snow cone, it like scared the daylights out of me, you know, like, so I was not prepared for the Yeti on Matterhorn.
And multiple Yetis.
It's all one Yeti.
It's all He's one Yeti. Moving. Yes. But interactions.
Honestly, the part that I found kind of freaky was the chain climb up, and he's like on the other side of the ice, and like you hear him moving or like banging on the ice, and like
you see the shadow and you see the eyes.
I was like, whoa, that's a little freaky. And you know, I'm like, this isn't like Monsters Inc. at all. And so I was just a little like frightened by that. But the ride itself was, I think I'm good to not ride it for another 10 years. to be quite honest, it was uncomfortable. It was fun. I had a good time on it, but I don't know that like the enjoyment of the ride outweighs my personal discomfort afterwards.
And you can see why Mom and Dad were so happy to volunteer to watch Georgiana the baby while we went on it. They're just like, no, you go. We don't need to do white rider swap for this one. We're good.
Mm-hmm. It definitely felt like I was riding a roller coaster made in like a paper mache mountain. That's what it felt like. Like everything, I'm like, okay, it's 1955. You know, there's like, all of this is held together by like sandwiches and hot glue and and like our hopes and wishes that it doesn't fall apart. And yeah, but it was fun. I liked the animatronic. It was very impressive and frightening.
Good.
Yeah, that was cool.
I think that's funny that one made your list, though, Ian. I am kind of surprised that Matterhorn made your list, and the Cars one, understandable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I feel like another one very interesting to me, this was like really surprising to me, I would not have thought this, but I felt like probably, and this is really crazy too, coming from a Disney World, or probably one of the best like combination of queue plus attraction experiences that I would say maybe ever had at Disney was actually the Indiana Jones ride. I felt like one was just fantastic. I felt like from the minute I got into the queue, I was like, I feel like I am in an Indiana Jones movie. And every part of the queue felt very good with the storytelling, not overdone. Like you can kind of, you know, still carry on a conversation. But I just felt like the whole time I was just like, wow, like I really feel like I'm going into a temple. I really feel like this is like the traps are right here. Even like walking across this part where like the spikes like come through the roof and the floor, I was like, it's kind of a little like eerie. Like I can kind of imagine like this happening and like, you know, the trap being triggered or something, you know, and obviously like it's not there, but I just felt like the queue experience was just amazing. And especially for Disneyland, where the queues are very short, a lot of them are just outside, basically just ropes or chains. It's not really a super immersive experience like I feel like probably Rise of the Resistance is like maybe the, you know, exception in Disneyland, or and just kind of in general, it's like very immersive queue line. But I felt like just Indiana Jones, I was like, wow, this just feels like just unexpectedly a very, very, very good queue that translates into a really pretty enjoyable ride as well, too. So I just, the whole time I was just like, yeah, this just felt like I stepped into the world of Indiana Jones for a minute and then stepped out of it. Just very, very well done. Very impressed with that one.
The Indiana Jones queue, actually, at one point, this was only here semi-recently that they changed it. In that spike room, there were actual, like, noise and banging and, like effects where it made it a little freakier. Like, you're like, oh, I just set off a booby trap. And there was a couple other things where it kind of got loud there. They did end up removing it because it did freak out some people a little too much. And that change recently only just happened.
Okay, interesting. I also loved the Indiana Jones ride and queue. I think it's very good. I feel like immersion and immersive are like buzzwords that get thrown around in theme parks a lot right now, and like have kind of lost some of their meaning, to be completely honest. But I do feel like if like Indiana Jones is an immersive experience and like you do feel like you're walking into a temple, there's archaeologists around and they're like discovering things, like even how like some of the trap, like the spike room in particular, like you're walking through and it's like, okay, the it's already been triggered and they've now made it safe for people to walk through.
Right.
Or even where there's like the rope that you can tug on and have them yell at you in the queue. So I do think Indiana Jones does a very good job of that.
And we were talking with Ashley. Did you overhear her? So for those, I mentioned her in the last episode. I did explain who she was. Ashley is a California local that I have become friends with through the power of social media. And she works over in Disney Animation. And she came down from Burbank just to kind of see me, to get the book signed, but then also to spend some time in Disneyland. And we ended up hanging out with her for a lot of the evening. And she pointed out some really great things. And she reminded me that they actually have a decoder there for the attraction. I don't know if you heard her say that.
Yes, I did. I did hear her say that.
And she did go up afterwards to the cast member to say, do you have any? And they're like, we just ran out earlier today. And so we didn't get our hands on one of the decoders. But you can ask a cast member, usually do it in the morning time, see if they have any of the decoders. And while you're waiting in the line, you can actually decode some of the ruins and see what the legends and stuff are on the walls. I think that's so cool that they have that.
Yeah, I love that. I just love, I think I just love the like, the total immersiveness of, you know, I feel like, you know, somewhere like Guardians of the Galaxy, there's a storyline there, sure, but it's like, you just kind of feel like, okay, yeah, I'm in any, you know, it could just be like a modern kind of hotel that has a lobby like this queue line, basically, and then there's Guardians of the Galaxy theme stuff happening there, but I feel like, you know, like Avatar, Flight of Passage, another great example of just like, wow, I feel like I'm in the world just standing here in line, kind of, and just, you know, whatever I'm looking at, or just, I don't know, just very good queue line, basically. And I feel like that obviously adds to the experience as well. So I feel like maybe as an attraction, Indiana Jones was like, yeah, it was pretty good attraction, very interesting. But the queue to me like elevated that to like one of the better experiences, right, I think we had while we were over there in California.
And for the Disneylanders and the people that know, y'all would be happy to know that the ride did not break down on us. It actually broke down after we got out of the ride. And we got through the entire experience without pausing or anything. And actually, that was the first time for me that I've been on the attraction and got to see it seamlessly and have it go through the entire thing without a major pause or a stop and restart. And I was so excited about it. It turned out so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good time. My favorite of Disneyland.
Yes.
I am a big fan of Pirates of the Caribbean. Yes. I really love the Florida version, but the Disneyland version is significantly better, in my opinion. I am a Disneyland hater through and through, but Disneyland Pirates of the Caribbean is phenomenal. I love the beginning where it's like you're just slowly going through the river and you have the little restaurant off to the right and you hear the banjo playing from the little shack. I love that. And then Two Waterfalls is phenomenal. The skeleton part that is like really elaborate in the beginning is very cool. I feel like it's much longer in my opinion than the Florida version. And it just, it's good. I like it. You definitely understand something you pointed out, Ian, after writing it, is like seeing where they got a lot more of the ideas for the movie that came out, especially with all of the skeletons at the beginning and there being a skeleton army in the movie. You definitely see more of that. And I think that was a very interesting observation that you made. And so, yeah, that's definitely my favorite. Radiator Springs Racers is wonderful. I love that ride so much. We got to ride it twice, which was great.
Once in the daytime and then once in the evening at dusk. And that, honestly, y'all, at riding Radiator Springs Racers in the evening when the lights are on, probably like peak tier.
It's pretty. It's very pretty. I love the music on that ride. I have the, so behind me, I have like my original Xbox and old CRT TV set up, and I have the Cars video game from like the early 2000s. And every time I've now ridden Radiator Springs Racers 3 times, and the beginning is the like intro music. It's the soundtrack when you boot up the loading screen in the menu in the game. It's the same music. I'm like, oh wow, I'm playing the Cars game IRL.
I love how that
fun. Yeah, so Radiator Springs Racers, phenomenal. Pirates is probably number one for me. Danielle, what was your takeaway, like, attraction-wise?
My favorite attraction is still, we didn't get to ride this when everybody was there, but I did get to ride it with Patreon family before the rest of the family flew in later on that evening. I went to Disneyland and I did get to go on to Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway over in Disneyland. It is my favorite attraction over here in Disney World. It is also my favorite attraction over in Disneyland. And I know some people are like, but Danielle's the same ride. It's actually not. The theming is different in the queue and the transition of, you're already in the cartoon world when you're in Disneyland and you're just continuing into the cartoon. We're here in Disney World. You're in the real world entering the cartoon world. So the theming and the transition is different, but the attraction, most of the scenes are on the left side here in Disney World, where in the attraction in Disneyland, most of the scenes are on the right side. So there are some key differences. There's some different Easter eggs. Theirs opened up after ours did. They were not bound by the same show building that the Great Movie Ride was in. So they have some elongated scenes. It stretches out a little bit differently and moves differently. And I like seeing those differences because maybe it's just because Chewie's in both of them. And that's why I love both of them so much.
That is something I didn't consider, is that you're starting in Toontown in the Disneyland version. So you don't have to go into the Toon world. Like, you're already there.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I kind of like that story building element there, because that's not something I considered until just now.
Oh, no. And that's, I stress that so much because everybody's like, oh, well, the one in Toontown's better. And it's true. The one in Toontown has way more to look at. It's the queue area has the different genres of Mickey. It's like the Mickey Museum exhibit and him throughout the ages from the very beginning to where he is now. And it goes through all the shorts from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and the more recent years. And we're over in El Cap, over here in Disney World, you're going into the Chinese theater that just happens to be premiering the brand new short, which is Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, Perfect Picnic. So you're going in to see the Perfect Picnic short. And that's why it's like, it looks like a generic movie theater. It doesn't have all this extra filler and extra fluff because you're just going into the Chinese theater in Hollywood and then you're entering into the cartoon. So that's why. And I love those differences. I love that they are uniquely special in their own little way. And even though one is maybe more interactive than the other, I don't want to devalue the one in Disney World, because I do love the one in Disney World.
Definitely. I think I wish there was a Toontown in Florida still.
The which one?
A Toontown? I wish there was a Toontown in Florida still. Just in general. Like, I love Toontown. I think it's really cute. I don't know. Did you all play Toontown, the online game, at all when that was a thing?
I did a little bit, but I think it was just, it used up back in the day. It used up so much like memory and RAM on the computer to make it work properly. I don't remember playing it for very long, or you had to wait in between things and wait in the community for things to happen. And I think I got bored of it too quickly.
Yeah, I played, me and some of my friends replayed, there's Toontown Reloaded that is out right now. It is a fully live service, has servers. It's a basically just Toontown, modern day. It's working. It's the same game.
Wow.
And I replayed it recently. And so anytime I was actually playing it before we went in October. And so when walking into Toontown, I'm like, wow, I feel like I'm walking right through the game. It's just like the Cars game again. Everything is video games for me, I guess. but I was just like ready to fight some cogs and throw some pies and stuff. And I was prepared, but they never showed up. Toontown was safe. And so they didn't need me. They didn't need my defense. you know. Yeah. But other parts of the park, any other rides that stood out to y'all while we were out there?
I was going to say two that were slightly disappointing. I'm not going to say bad, unenjoyable. They were still enjoyable, but disappointing based on expectations were actually Jungle Cruise. I felt like our experience on Jungle Cruise was, I don't know. I don't know if it was just the skipper. I don't know if it was, you know, missing certain parts of the ride, like the, you know, kind of the temple scene inside stuff. But I just felt like being on Jungle Cruise, I was like, yeah, this just kind of, like, if I had only been to Disneyland, I would be like looking at Jungle Cruise like, yeah, this is probably one of the rides they need to like refresh and like kind of get rid of and put something else here. But at Disney World, it's like, no, Jungle Cruise, it's like iconic. It's like so funny. It's just like one of those rides you just kind of ride just to have a good time. So I feel like that one was slightly more just disappointing to me, and for I don't even really know why, but I just walked away from Jungle Cruise being like, that was not the
when
best
I tell
experience.
You okay, y'all, this is gonna be my hot take. This is my hot take. Every time I've been in Disneyland, and I have gone on the Jungle Cruise now multiple times, I have not had the same great experience with a skipper like what we have in Disney World. With the skippers in Disney World, maybe it's just the college program kids. Maybe that's why. They are so happy to be there. They are so excited. And they're like, I'm going to go a little off script. And then maybe it's just the sass level is really there. And I've had great Jungle Cruise interactions here in Walt Disney World. We also have the temple. They don't have a temple there. Their pacing is a little different. But again, theirs is the OG. And then ours just, I like the pacing of the Disney World one and how you go the elephant bathing pool. I like how it's at the end of the temple. So you exit and you're like, oh, we stumbled upon this elephant bathing pool. This is so cool. I like that. Where they don't have that over in the Disneyland one. So I don't know. I feel like there's more opportunities for some better jokes in Disney World. I was shocked by, I feel like the backside of water joke that you see go viral on social media, like, this is it, the eighth wonder of the world, the backside of water. Oh, 2H. That happens in Disney World. Those videos are mostly in Disney World. They are not happening over in Disneyland.
Yeah, that joke did not land on our boat at all. And I felt like it was interesting, too. I noticed, at least from like the queue line of Disneyland's Jungle Cruise, there's no real setup that the Jungle Cruise Company, Jungle Navigation Company, or whatever it's called, is like, how would you say, like irresponsible with its voyages. Like, I feel like when you're walking through the queue of the Disney World Jungle Cruise, you're kind of mentally preparing of like, oh, okay, yeah, there's like certain words that are like crossed off. And it's like, obviously they lose boats. Obviously they're giving like half off passages for you to die in the jungle and stuff. It's like, there's a very tongue-in-cheek jokes about the like reliability of the company, basically. And it's like, you're kind of like under the impression of like, wow, yeah, I'm taking my life into my own hands, kind of getting on this boat with this skipper. Right. And then the skipper's kind of banter goes with that. But I feel like in Disneyland, the queue is like very serious. It's like, this is a Jungle Cruise company. It's just Jungle Cruise themed. That's all we do. And then you have this skipper that's like kind of half funny about it. And you're like, wait. So am I supposed to be laughing at these jokes? Like, you're just not set up in the same way, I guess, right, as I feel like the Disney World one.
I wonder if it's because of the audio. So I did notice this, that they didn't have the same audio overlay that we do in Disney World, where they do the announcements and stuff. They kind of do, but it didn't happen as frequently with the guy coming over, unless we just couldn't hear it. And the guy that comes over is saying, what's a good line that we have over in Disney World?
I don't know. I don't know that I can help you there.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't think the Disneyland one had any. I think they had like the little radio booth that was maybe playing something kind of up in like the upper deck area when you're up there. But I don't think there was anything when we were in the lower area going over the loudspeakers.
Alberta Falls did come over the PA at one point, and she's supposed to be the new owner and operator of the Jungle Navigation Company. So she did come over once. I remember that once in the queue. But in Disney World, she'll come over, but also he kind of sounds like, here at the Jungle Navigation Company, if you have lost your child, good luck. You will not see them again. Like, it's kind of like those funny lines, and it's setting you up of, they're trying their best, but it's not good enough, and we're just making it work. Like, you can get that over in the queue in Disney World, and it comes over the PA very clearly. We did not have that same experience over in Disneyland.
Yeah. No, and I do think the cast member makes or breaks the ride.
Totally.
I think that really makes a huge difference. And for some reason, Disney World cast members are just more jazzed to be on the Jungle Cruise than Disneyland cast members, in my opinion. I like Jungle Cruise in Orlando. I feel like I'm on a fun, goofy boat ride. It's kind of cartoony funny, where Disneyland, I feel like I'm on Heart of Darkness the ride. Like, it's just depressing and kind of sad and frightening, and the cast members don't want to be there, and that's just the vibe that you get from the Disneyland version of Jungle Cruise. But Disney World, I do think, knocks it out of the park. I think in general, most of my inner, I feel like maybe it's just the culture of Disney World versus Disneyland, and in like the cast member culture, I mean by that, like the workplace environment, how that feels. I do feel like Disney World employees and cast members are more excited to be there, more invested in making magical moments, in like really making sure guests feel like they're having a good time. And I feel like you get that in Disneyland, but not as much. I think there is something where it's like a lot of Disneyland to me feels like people are there, they're getting their paycheck and they're going home, you know, and they're just doing their job. They're hitting a button on a ride. And I do think that really I think cast members and cast interactions can really make people's vacations. If you are spending a ton of money to go to Disney World, like, or go to a Disney park or something, like, go where you know they're going to be happy to see you and not see you as a nuisance, you know? Like, Disney World is the place to be.
And Jacqueline even made a comment on that. And so, y'all, I've had some fantastic Disneyland cast member experiences, but even this time, I actually had... We said something. Oh, we were about to get on the swings, and this was before you guys got there. We were about to get on the swings on California Adventure, and we had somebody that could not take the stairs. So we had to wait for the elevator, and the cast member actually rolled their eyes at us, and I almost lost it. And I didn't tell y'all this, but so this is a podcast exclusive, and I'll just say it here on the podcast. I was like number one, 10-year frontline cast member. I would never, I just smacked myself. I would never get away with that in my location. And I was about to just be like, get me your coordinator right now. And I held my tongue because I was in front of other people and nobody else reacted to it. And I was like, is this just the different standard? Is this just like, is this okay? Are you used to this from the cast members? This should not be something, especially when you are with somebody that has a disability and cannot do the normal function of getting up the stairs. You should never roll your eyes at somebody because they are not capable of doing it. And it's an inconvenience to you. It's not an inconvenience to you. They just have to take the elevator. It's not that big of a deal. So yeah, I was pretty heated about that. So there's the hot take on that one. And
it's the spicy Danielle. But yeah. I do agree. I felt like there was a lot of, I feel like the best way of describing it, and again, this is, you know, I'm sure there are exceptions to the rule. So, you know, if you work at Disneyland and you're a magical Disney cast member, great for you for being there and representing.
Again,
we've
had other great cast member interactions. That was just the one off time. Totally. I was just like, I was a little jarred by it.
Yeah, but I do feel like in general my impression was there were a lot of people who were working at Disneyland that were like, for example, like, oh, I'm working in Batu, wink, wink. But like, we both know that like, we're both just here in California together. Like, come on, let's not be like too crazy about this. We want to be California cool. And then there's a lot of people in Orlando that are like, I'm working in Batu. I speak fluent, you know, whatever.
Fluent Huttese. They're over there and just going, Runda di Hokunda.
Yeah, actually like do, like, yeah, but they're just like, I take very seriously that I am on stage, I am in character, and I am in this role, and I don't break that for the sake of like not being like too cool for school kind of or something. I don't know, there's just a lot more like joy and pride I felt like in the cast members' respective locations at Disney World, whereas Disneyland, it just felt like everyone, I was like, man, I feel like we could have just kind of like gotten you off the street, trained you how to like, you know, push the button for the ride, and you'd be doing the job you're doing right now of kind of like, yeah, they gave me this uniform, but I don't really care, whatever, stuff now, like that, instead of fully like believing that.
Is that because Disneyland does not have the college program anymore?
Do they not?
They do not. So their college program was already very, very small pre-COVID, and then after COVID, that was their excuse to just not bring it back. So the only way to do the Disney college program or the Disney internships, like the really big internship programs, is through Walt Disney World. So the kids that are here for their 6 month or even sometimes less than that, depending on the program that they're part of, when they're here, they're very excited to be here. Their magic hasn't broken. Maybe it's because we have so much fresh magic coming in, as I would call it when I was a cast member. You have these fresh eyes, these people that are so excited to be there. And the turnover rate of these people that are so excited to be in their location is more frequent. Maybe that's why. And then you have only in Disneyland, they're actually very few full-timers. They're all part-timers.
Really?
Is the main thing. There are full-time positions, but it is not the same percentage that there are full-timers in Walt Disney World.
Yeah, I think that that's very interesting, because I do think that really, I mean, sheds a light on like the workplace culture of Disneyland, in that like for Disney World, you have these incoming young kids that are excited to work at Disney World. And granted, it is like borderline slave labor, but they're excited to be there.
Right.
And I do think like having people that are excited about their job makes other people excited about their job,
right,
and like happy to be there. And like, if you're working with happy people, you are happier. And
right,
like, if everybody's miserable and just clocking to get a paycheck, then nobody's going to have a great time. Like a lot of people, like you get a lot of, how do I describe it? Thermometers. Cause the thermometer just kind of reads the room and reads the temperature, where it's like, if you're a thermostat, you're also setting the temperature. So if you want to be a positive thermostat, set a positive vibe and let the people like, and I think you just run into people that are just kind of like reciprocating energy and just doing the same thing that other people are doing in Disneyland. And so you do have standout people, but it's also like when you have that standout moment, you're like, whoa, I'm really noticing it now. Like I'm really experiencing like the Disney magic, like the Disney like customer service and like the good that like Disney is kind of known for, and like that's what they have based a lot of their brand on, and is just like having phenomenal customer service and friendly cast members. And you really don't get that in Disneyland as much.
Now, is that also because the mentality is that the people that go to Disneyland are mostly locals and have been multiple times, even within the same month?
I don't think that should excuse it.
It shouldn't excuse it, but it becomes the norm, and it becomes the like, and this happened when I first went to Disneyland. I had so many questions because like my tickets weren't working. The first time I went, post being a cast member in 2021, and there were still some COVID restrictions, I would go up to cast members and I would ask them questions, and they would look at me like I had two heads of like, why don't you know this? And I was like, because I genuinely don't know, because this does operate so differently. So don't give me sass over it. And that was, that was an experience I definitely had in 2021. So I think, and maybe it's because when I had my time in Disney World, I had to keep reminding myself on a regular basis of people are going to keep asking you the same question because they genuinely do not know, because Disney World for most people is a once in a lifetime experience. And this might be the only time that they ever go on a vacation to Walt Disney World, and where Disneyland, it's like the norm. You don't have those same conversations every 30 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I don't want to sound like entitled or anything, but like, that's your job. Like, yeah, you're there to help people and like to answer questions. And like, we've all done that. We all three of us have had,
we've all worked in the service industry. We get it.
Suck. We know what it's like. We get it. But that's the job. Like, you're there to help people.
Right.
And like, I don't know. It's just is a little frustrating.
I did not expect the conversation turning to that point, but again,
I didn't either. This just came out of
me. It just came out, obviously. But we obviously did not talk about this as a family, and we did not divulge this to each other until now, after we're mentally processing it after we get home. So again, to our Disneyland cast members, we do love you guys. We had some amazing interactions with many of you, but it's unfortunate when the very few negative interactions do outweigh the positive. And those are the ones that you remember in your mind more so than positive ones, which is sad. And that's going to happen in any situation. So
I will end my rant.
Oh,
with a positive interaction I had in Disneyland.
Okay. Yes.
When I was getting dinner while you were at Oogie Boogie, Danielle, which we can dive into that next. We should touch on the Disney animatronic before we dump into Oogie Boogie.
Okay.
But while you were at Oogie Boogie, I was getting dinner at the Disneyland Hotel, the terrace in Disneyland Hotel.
Isn't it Ticonderoga?
Ticonderoga, is it that? It might be.
Because that's the type of pine tree, isn't it?
Maybe. I don't think that's right.
Let us know at podcast at thedapperdanielle.com. Let us know how bad I said it. Anyway.
The food was good. That's all we care about.
I was buying my dinner, and the cast member asked me, he's like, hey, do you have any discounts? And I'm like, no, I don't have any discounts. I'm just here. And he was like, okay, I'll give you one. He's like, don't worry about it. He gave me a 10% off. I think it was a DVC discount when it rang up on the receipt. And I'm like, I'm not DVC, but I'm very thankful for it. So that was very sweet of him. I appreciate it. I'm very thankful for that. That was a very positive cast member interaction that I had in Disneyland.
There was some really great magical moment. Okay, let's touch on that real quick. There were some really great magical moments that happened. Like, we got onto Cars the second time because of a magical moment created by a security
cast
member.
That's true. Yes, we did.
And
but he was also a fan.
That too. But it was, but those magical moments and like the, hey, let's create a little extra pixie dust is actually more encouraged over in Disneyland than it is over in Disney World right now.
Okay.
Interesting. So that is something like, oh, hey, let's go ahead and we'll comp you this food item because something went wrong or all this other stuff. That is being more heavily agreed on over in Disneyland than it is a world. And I can confirm that from cast member friends, especially people that work in merchandise or even the cast members themselves. There's not as much magic being made for cast members over in Disney World right now. And that comes from like, for example, a good example, over at the confectionery over in Disney World, the cast members, if there's a new food item coming out, they are not allowed to sample it beforehand. It is not like they don't like damage out a couple of the Rice Krispie treats, cut them up, and then like let the cast members try them. The cast members have to purchase them to be able to try them. And which I think is wrong. If you're making the thing, you should have product knowledge over what you're creating and what you're doing. And that's something that I've been very passionate about here recently, of being like, no. So when you go up to a cast member and you ask, hey, which one's better? Sometimes they genuinely don't know because they have not purchased their own food item because they have not been given the chance to sample it.
And it's expensive if you have to purchase yourself. Like, that should be a perk of working in food service, is you get to try the food.
Yeah. Like, especially if it's a new thing.
Should just be a given. That way you know what you're talking about. You can give recommendations. Like that. Like, if you go to a restaurant, you ask a waiter, like, oh, what do you recommend off the menu? Hopefully they have an answer. Where if, like, they've never had it because it's too expensive and they don't want to buy it themselves, then they're just like, I don't know. I've heard the chicken parm is good, you know?
Product like, knowledge, y'all. I am such a passionate person of product knowledge. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so all this to say, cast members, the operation is different in both land and world. We understand and we acknowledge that the culture is different. And so pay attention to that as you're planning out your time in Disney World or Disneyland. Just know that the operation does operate differently.
Yeah. Speaking of cast members, let's talk about the original cast member, Mr. Walt Disney himself.
Yes.
What did y'all think of the animatronic? We got to see that.
I will let you guys give your opinions first.
Okay, my opinion was, I felt like the controversy around how Walt looked irrelevant to me. I was like, sure, he looks like an animatronic Walt, no big deal. I also felt like the idea of putting him into animatronic form, I feel like was, again, after seeing the show, I was like, irrelevant. Like, he can be an animatronic, he cannot be an animatronic. Like, we're using Walt's words, we're using Walt's ideas, like, we're not, no one is really too terribly concerned with like being sacrilegious, for lack of a better word, by putting Walt in anything else. So why do we care about animatronic all of a sudden now? So to me, not very controversial at all. After, like, I was just kind of like, whatever, not a big deal. I did think that the show itself, I felt like the reveal of Walt as an animatronic at the end was, to me, felt very out of place. Like, I felt like the whole show was this ramp up, like, historical development of Walt Disney, all the, you know, all the animation studios, the groundbreaking technological inventions, how he changed animation, how he changed the Schmidt movie business, changed the amusement park business. And then the reveal is, like, supposed to be, like, and now, like, here in, like, 2025, Walt's still changing things, and he's an animatronic form, just like technology he created. And I'm like, but I feel like, why would you have not done something? Like, to me, it would have been actually better to do something where, like, the screen shows, like, Mickey Mouse being, like, drawn and being beginning to animate. And then Mickey Mouse, like, eventually, like, the white page disappears, and it's, like, Mickey Mouse. And then Mickey Mouse, like, jumps off the screen, and Mickey Mouse is, like, the animatronic. Because to me, that's, like, the logical continuation of Walt and how he took things that were two-dimensional, made them three-dimensional, took ideas, turned them into reality. But to me, just slapping Walt in animatronic form and having him go through one of his old quotes, it felt like this weird, like, not being in line with the story that the show was trying to tell at all. So to me, that was more of my point. Is I just felt like the last scene was just a bad scene in the show, kind of just like, this is not a good capstone of the story you're telling throughout the show. This feels like we're trying to force a way to get a Walt animatronic into the park. And so I just felt like that to me was like, I didn't like the ending of the show. I really like the history part of the show. I like the lead up, but I feel like it just ended on this weird note, but not because Walt was an animatronic, just because it didn't fit with the story, kind of. So it's like story integrity is kind of more of what I was hoping for, as opposed to like, I don't really care about the Walt animatronic. Like that was irrelevant. So that's kind of my weird, I liked it, but I didn't like it opinion on the show and the Walt animatronic.
Right. And Clarence, you even kind of said earlier when we were there, you're just like, well, I've seen the show. For those that don't know, the half of the beginning show that Ian was talking about, where it goes through the history of Walt Disney, that is a script for script recreation. Actually, the transitions and everything, it is a recycled video.
It's the same movie.
It's the same movie, reanimated. And it's the
not reanimated. It's just put on there. Oh, no, they're just projecting the exact same movie.
Re-narrated.
No, not even.
No, it is.
Other than because, the Bob Iger part.
Well, the Bob Iger does all of it. We're here in Disney World. This same movie plays in one man's dream over in Hollywood Studios, and it's in the little movie theater in the little history museum over there, and it's voiced by Julie Andrews.
Oh, I guess he did narrate the whole thing, didn't he?
And then, so Bob Iger took the exact same script and re-narrated it for the 70th version here. So I was just like, I already know all this. I was shocked, though, by the amount of people that were in that room that when we were leaving were like, oh, I didn't know that history of Walt Disney. And I'm like, what? What? And maybe it's because we've seen the show, maybe because we know our Disney history a little bit better. But I almost was like, are you for real? You guys didn't know any of this? For
Danielle, this
history?
Is why you have a fan base, because nobody knows any of this.
Oh my goodness. Accurate. I
That's
expect y'all to know better.
Follow you.
And I talk about One Man's Dream so much in Hollywood Studios that I anticipate that. Okay, that's all y'all's homework. If you are here locally in Walt Disney World and you want to know what it's like to be in the Walt Disney attraction in Disneyland, just go to One Man's Dream and then watch a video of the animatronic at the very end. And then you're set. You're done. And it's Julie Andrews. Julie Andrews' narration was fabulous compared to Bob Iger's.
Yeah, I agree. I do think it was cool that they were able to like give him sentience by putting Walt's frozen head in there and like having his brain in the animatronic. I think that's a really cool addition. It was a very impressive Tom Hanks animatronic. But I will say the whole time I was just like, I wish I was watching Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah, I just don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, I feel like it is an interesting idea. It is novel right now. It's obviously made a lot of news rounds, but I don't know. I just feel like it's going to be something that it wouldn't surprise me if even like 5-10 years from now, it's like, yeah, we're done with this. We're doing something else with the area. Because I don't think anyone is going to get the warm fuzzies. No one's going to have any emotional connection to it. No one's going to be like, I love coming to see Walt the animatronic. Like, I think people would even respond that way more to like Lincoln or even like, you know, Mark Twain and Teddy Roosevelt over in like the American Adventure in Epcot, because it's like, well, at least this is some historical
figure. I
think
you mean Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, is it not Teddy? Teddy Roosevelt's in the American
Adventure.
He's in it.
He's
not
one
of the narrators. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's not the narrator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ben Franklin and Mark Twain.
Ben Franklin, Mark Twain, Teddy Roosevelt. It's just you at least have like an emotional connection with them of like, okay, yeah, I want to see them. It's kind of fun to see an old historical figure moving. But I think with Walt, it's like we have video of him. I don't know. No one's going to get the warm fuzzy. So I just think it's going to die out eventually, personally. I don't think it's going to be around for forever. But
well, and that's something else I don't think people realize is that Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln will be returning. So the idea is that once they get through the 70th, I think this will probably change over in January is my assumption, after the holiday season, after most Disneyland locals have gotten to see the Walt Disney Presents. Eventually it's going to be every other show and it's going to rotate. So it'll be Walt Disney and then the stage rotates and Lincoln will be on the other side and then it will do the Lincoln show afterwards. So, or at least from my understanding, or they might just do the show, one show in the morning and then one show in the evening, or maybe like what they do over at, Paris and Epcot, how it's, Impressions de France in the morning and in the afternoon, and then the Beauty and the Beast sing along in the middle of the day. It could be that also.
Everyone knows that Lincoln has a tough time in theaters at night, you know, so it's just kind of like.
Yes!
It's true.
That's so bad. Anyway, Clarence, do you have any additional thoughts about the Walt Disney animatronic?
I feel like I said what I wanted to say. Okay. I made the jokes I wanted to make. I think it was fine. It was forgettable. I think that's the worst thing is like, it sucks when something is just forgettable, you know, like I'm not going to care about it. I don't need to go back and see it. I want to see Abraham Lincoln. I want to hear the Gettysburg Address, you know, and maybe that's just the history nerd in me that likes that. But I like Disney too, and I like the history of Disney. I like the animation history. I find that I was more invested in the video portion, despite having seen One Man's Dream so many times. I'm more invested in watching that than watching the animatronic. And I think the Ian, what you said, like a Mickey Mouse coming off the screen and that being the animatronic, the progression of the story, I think that's a brilliant idea. I think
there have been Mickey Mouse animatronics, and then you have the real Mickey Mouse is outside of the theater. He meets right there.
yeah. But still, like, then, I mean, the storytelling of the Walt Disney, like, experience out there and the animatronic is just, it's lackluster.
Yeah.
I think those are my thoughts on that, you know?
I would say I agree with both of y'all. I did not mind the way he looks. And at the same time, the animatronic is not designed for you to do 10x zoom from the front row to see the silicone face, right? We were actually sitting in one of the back two rows, and from a distance I was like, okay, that does look like Walt Disney. And for everybody saying that his neck is too big, y'all don't know how many motors are in his neck, like controlling his face. There's like three to four motors just controlling his facial expression and his head moving up and down and side to side. I loved the movement with his hands. I think that was probably my favorite part, because that motion with the hand motions and the arms moving, it looked like Walt Disney from his recordings and his TV appearances. I thought that was very natural for Walt, and I didn't mind it, but yeah, I would say it was kind of forgettable. So overall, it wasn't bad. I am happy that that has been added to the theater. I am glad that it will be eventually switching between Abraham Lincoln and Walt Disney. Because I want best of both worlds. I want to have a Hannah Montana moment. I want to have both.
I get it. Well, speaking of shows, we got to see World of Color while we were out there. That was interesting. Yes. What did y'all think of that?
I will preface it with, okay, the version of World of Color that we saw, there are different shows. This one in particular was created for the 70th anniversary, and the storytellers are the emotions for Inside Out. So I will say that this version of World of Color is not the same as the last one I saw. And I also saw the last holiday version, which if you are a Disneylander and you did not know, the holiday version will not be returning this year because they are continuing the 70th anniversary one through this holiday season. Which I am kind of bummed about. I thought the holiday version, I honestly like the holiday version more than the version that we saw. But I want to know your opinions. Ian, this was your first time seeing it. Clarence, was this your first time?
It was my first time.
Okay. What were our thoughts?
Ian, do you want to take it away? I want to hear what you think.
Yeah.
Well, you also had a baby that was a little overstimulated.
It's true. I was watching.
He was watching Georgiana.
I was watching and I was listening some. I did not, you know, feel like I sat there and fully immersed myself in it. I would say that in general, this is true for Disneyland, Disney World, water shows to me just feel like flops. And I feel like I'm just kind of being negative Nancy here. My last few like things have been just very negative, but I just feel like water shows like Fantasmic, the Luminous, and then World of Color. It's a really interesting canvas. I like that we're trying to push technology, show technology, use water. Some of the stuff they do with projections and stuff is interesting. But to me, it just always falls flat somehow. It doesn't. And I don't know if it's they don't use water the way I'm thinking they would. I don't know if it's that the technology just actually can't be done. But like, for example, like in this show, I feel like I think what kills me is, again, kind of like with the Walt animatronic, it's like the storytelling. It's like they don't use water to tell the story the way I think they would. Like, I feel like the best example from the World of Color one is they're doing the whole Rainbow Connection song. And at the end, it's like they have the fountains come up as they're like singing, you know, the lovers, the dreamers, and me. Mm-hmm. But they just kind of have like all the fountains on full blast with like colors kind of playing. And it's like, I don't really understand like why in that moment you wouldn't do something where it's like, you say the lovers and then you have like a third of the fountains come up with like the colors of the rainbow, like pink and red, and kind of more like the like more romantic colors or love kind of colors. And then you have the dreamers, could be like the blue, the purple and stuff kind of come up, fill in a little bit more. And then me is like the green ones finally filling in like a full rainbow kind of across the board. Again, just a show telling note, you know, it's just could just be different ideas of what a show should be or whatever. But to me, it's like, I just felt like they kind of just like, it's like someone sitting there with like the water fountain, just kind of full blast, full blast, full blast, full blast, full blast, full blast. And it's like, there's no like, I don't feel like they use it in the right way. And I feel like the same way with Luminous, where it's like, okay, yes, there is water. It's sort of incorporated, but it's not being like maximized somehow as far as like a show telling element. So to me, the water element of a show is already kind of like not going to win me over necessarily. But then I also right. felt like, I think that the like inside out emotions, it's really strange to kind of, to me, tell the story of, I feel like it was kind of in a way, a very similar story to, what is it? Happily Ever After, the one at Magic Kingdom right now. Very yeah. similar story of like, okay, yes, you have like, you know, us all together. Then we, you know, experience the hardships, the downfalls and stuff like that. And then it's like, okay, yeah, it's love in the end that kind of carries us through to like our happily ever after. Kind of similar vibe, I feel like, for World of Color. But to me, telling it from the inside out perspective, it just feels like a very, very, very complicated storytelling element to bring in, because then it's like there's all these questions of like, okay, so like, are the bad guys really me, and am I like killing parts of me or defeating parts of me to be good? But then there's other things too where it's like, okay, in Inside Out, it's like, oh, fear, you know, we're so glad you brought a parachute because that really saved us. And it's like, I don't really know if I like the messaging of like, we'll nurture your fear because it might save you one day. It's like, that feels like really weird messaging to kind of have in the show as well too. So I felt like, just to me, it's like Inside Out, interesting movie, kind of a weird choice for like the host, if you will, of a show narrative like right. this, where you have good and bad, because Inside Out is all inside of a person. So it's like, just, I don't know, it's like weird then thinking about the bad and the good, you know, it's, I don't know. So I just feel like that was like a really complicated element. I really was like wrestling with that of like, this feels like a weird focus for the show.
And I feel like,
yeah,
when you watch the Inside Out movies, it's to make you reflect on your own personal feelings, where by doing it in the show format that we saw, it's kind of generic. It's making your emotions and how you process your feelings very generic and not unique or individualized. So I think it kind of lost the message of Inside Out too yeah. by doing that.
So anyway, so that's my, sorry, kind of longer take, but I felt like the show itself, from the like elements that were a part of the show, was just a little bit of a letdown. But then the just the like the host kind of for the show of Inside Out, the main kind of focus, just left me with a lot of questions, a lot of like mental kind of like wrestling with like, I don't really know how I feel about this story kind of as a whole. But I like the music. I like, you know, dancing along. I think I would like it better if it was like, hey, at 5 p.m. or, you know, just after 7 p.m., we're just doing this show. It's not the Nighttime Spectacular. It's just another show at Disney. Kind of, we'd be like, okay, cool. It's not this big pressure right. to be the Nighttime Spectacular. But as the like Nighttime Spectacular, I was like, it's not my favorite. It didn't mm-hmm. have a super strong impression with me. But I'd love to hear your thoughts as well, both of you.
Clarence, I have a more broad spectrum opinion over this. So I want you to tell me specifically over World of Color, because that's the event that you actually saw. What was that? Yes. What's that face for?
I feel vindicated as a Disneyland hater.
As a Disney Worlder or the Disneylander?
No, as a Disneyland hater.
Oh.
I feel vindicated. I've been right this whole time. anyway. World of Color, again, I think the worst sin you can commit as an experience or a show is being forgettable. And this was one of the most forgettable to me. I mean, it's right up there with Epcot. And what was the Epcot one you kept naming?
Luminous. There's Luminous, the current show, and then there's Harmonious one before. It. Yeah.
I don't even.
Yeah, harmonious. Any of the, yeah, true. Even more offensive.
If you look at the history also of most water-based shows in Disney World and Disneyland, there's a long history of they don't usually work out great in the end. So maybe we should move away from this direction in some of our shows.
You know what I do remember that is a water show?
What?
Is the fountain in the middle of Epcot, right behind Spaceship Earth.
Yeah. Like,
and there's no video format. There was no video format to that when it existed.
It was just music and water. Just and it. No lights.
It was fine. It was good. And it's like the water was the storytelling element. That was the, like, the entertainment was seeing how the water moved and how it, like, interacted with itself and with the cannons that were shooting it out. And I think you made a great point, Ian, of, like, the water wasn't doing any of the storytelling in World of Color. It was like you were watching a blurry TV screen the whole time. Like, it was just used for projections most of the time and, like, for some pretty lights. Like, I don't know. It was as, and especially for it being a 70th anniversary show, like 70 years of Disney, like, why are we using Pixar characters?
Because you're at Pixar Pier.
Sure. But it's for the 70th. Like, it's not 70 years of Pixar.
Right.
You know, like, let's use, like, Disney. I know Pixar is owned by Disney, but let's use, like, classic Disney IP as the drivers for this story. It's like, why not incorporate, like, more of classic Snow White, the first, like, full-length feature of Walt Disney? Why not feature some of, like, some callbacks to the Merry Melodies? Or
which is funny because they have that ride right there. They have the one that's the what is it, Springtime Melodies or whatever, like the original Disney, like, short. They have the ride right there, and it's like, why wouldn't you, like, project over onto that one as, like, the first ride and, like, bring it into the show or something? You know, I don't know, something like that. I agree basically with what you're saying.
Yeah, it just is like, why not make it more one man's dreamy? Like, I think maybe it's like, maybe the one man's dream thing was in the wrong spot. Maybe it should have been World of Color.
I mean,
and, like,
maybe the Walt Disney animatronic should do the Spider-Man swing across Pixar Pier's spot.
I think that would be, I would watch that. I would enjoy that. Because that would be memorable.
That would be very memorable. I would be like, wow.
You'd be like, holy cow, it's Walt Disney in a, like, doing the Spider-Man thing. Like, it's very impressive. He falls in the water. Maybe he starts swimming. That'd be so funny. I would love that. Heike would love that. But, like, also, like, it's called World of Color. Why are we not using the World of Color theme song from the old television special?
And
like,
that's,
the world is a carousel of color.
That does, like, exist in the other version of the show, in the older version. And it had a little more of those homages to World is a Carousel of Color. And it I thought that was beautiful. I loved the in the original show, I loved the pacing. I thought the water had more of an element to it instead of just a screen mode. I do feel like they went heavily in the screen projections this time instead of just the audio and then colorful water.
It felt like they were making a show for iPad kids.
They literally were. That's 100%. Okay, that ties into my opinion on this.
Yes, okay. I want to hear what you got to say.
So I think you just hit the nail on the head of that these shows were created for iPad kids, people that are not entertained anymore unless they have something flashing in a screen and a character in front of them at all times. Because I got to experience a couple other nighttime spectaculars. You guys had to go to the room because of the baby. So I stayed in the park late one night and I got to see the projection show of Skywalker, the saga projections over in Batu. I went to see, I saw Wondrous Journeys for the first time, which is their fireworks show for the 70th anniversary, or was. They're now back into Halloween Screams. And we saw Halloween Screams in October when we were there, Clarence. And then
we did. I thought I was going to watch Wishes.
I know. I'm joking. It was okay. The and then I got to see Paint the Night, which is their parade for their nighttime parade. which is like the OG, everybody loves it, everything else like that. I will say for all of these experiences, the amount of over the top projections was utilized in everything. So Paint the Night, for example, I didn't mind it. It was definitely a party. I thought it was very cool. There were some floats I really loved. I loved the dancer sequences. I loved the movers. But I will say there were certain things where like Mac the truck comes over and he's very cool. He's very impressive. I liked him. But at the same time, it was so overstimulating. And I'm a 30-something year old adult. I can only imagine being a child and seeing this in like even three times bigger than me. And it being almost too much. And there's so many screens, so many LED screens in every single float for this parade. And I was standing next to Samantha, another content creator, and it was our first time seeing it together. And I looked at her and I was like, this is like a lot. This is like, it's very party-ish. It's not really a consistent story, right? There's no immersion in the storytelling. It's just a party the entire time from start to finish, right? Yeah. And I turned to her and it was specifically the Mack truck because it was just all lights at one point on the side. And I turned to her and I'm like, is this what Coachella's like? Is this just a rave? Is that what we're at? And we're on Main Street right now. And I think some people really love that because they want that constant entertainment. They want it to be overstimulating. And I'm like, but you're losing the meat and potatoes in what makes really good entertainment. Where's the heart? Where is the story and the emotional connection to it? I did experience that a little bit more during the fireworks and the projection show Wondrous Journeys. I felt that way more than anything in World of Color. I thought World of Color was I associated that just like Paint the Night of it was just a constant party. I did not feel any crazy emotions, even though we had the Inside Out emotions there. Then I should be feeling crazy emotions. Didn't have any of that. Did experience that a little bit more in Wondrous Journeys. But again, I know it's Disneyland. I understand that their fireworks are not the same as Disney World's and they cannot be the same as Disney World's because it is, we are so close to neighborhoods immediately behind the park. But they just can't compare. They cannot compare fireworks. The projections were the main thing. There were a little more emotional tidbits to it, but it doesn't resonate the same as like Happily Ever After does. I don't know what Disney is going to do. You cannot top Happily Ever After, and even like that's the only thing that could top Wishes, and people still love Wishes.
No, so the Wishes is better in my opinion because it didn't rely on projections.
True, it had a little, it just had a little bit of colors, that was the thing, is that the fireworks, the storytelling through music is what really tugged at the heartstrings, and I feel like the projection side of it, it distracts you from your senses and what you are feeling internally through music and nature, if that makes sense. And maybe that's why we like the OG Epcot fountain so much, was because it was only a natural element put to music, and maybe it just made you connect a little bit more emotionally with yourself than seeing a screen distracting you and a screen giving you dopamine. It was these natural elements giving you dopamine.
No, I think that's a great point because like water shows in a way are almost like modern art in that modern art is kind of like a reflection. Like you see what is in you.
Right.
Like that's how you're interpreting modern art. And like, I think the same with a water show and maybe the Epcot fountain. I think that's a really interesting point as we're going to get more existential and philosophical about water shows at Disney.
I like
it. Who knew?
Like you're essentially like, if there's no stimuli other than the water moving and the music, like you are interpreting it how you want to. You're getting in to it like what you're getting out of. Like you're getting what you give into it or whatever. Like you are kind of like creating your own experience rather than letting a TV show or like a screen or like a bunch of characters tell you how you're supposed to feel. Mm-hmm. Like, true. You know, like I think that's Wishes the same way. Like granted, the music does manipulate your emotions in a way, but it also is a different, like it's kind of leading you and you can choose to follow.
Right.
Rather than just be told like, this is what it is. This is where you're at. you know?
And y'all, this is exactly why for Happily Ever After, still to this day in Walt Disney World, I will not watch it from the front of the castle. Have I? Absolutely. Did I watch it when it came back? Absolutely. Just so I could get the full experience. But I will purposefully choose not to watch it from the normal spot because I want it to be just fireworks and I want it to be just music. And I choose specifically not to watch the projections.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. Yeah. I think everybody should try that.
Yeah.
Watch the listen See, and watch the show from a different spot.
Are we telling people not to watch the show or watch it in a different spot? Are we really encouraging people to really tackle with their mental point and emotional point of where they're at in life and like maybe be more present in the moment? And like, and it's weird to say that for Disney entertainment and for Disney fireworks of like, okay, don't watch it how you normally should. You need to do this so you have a deeper emotional connection to it instead. And I think it'll totally change your perspective on Disney entertainment, y'all.
But it's interesting, too, because I would say that I think people, even if they don't realize it, they already are responding to, like the less is more kind of that you guys are, like, talking about here. Because it's kind of a shame that, like, Shaboom in Radiator Springs was more emotionally connecting and fun than World of Color, and all that was is turning on the lights and playing some old music. There's no show telling element of that, you know.
You know what the highlight was? The highlight is recreating something that you could not see. So like in the Cars movie, it is the they're slow dancing, they're just going down the road, they're just going for a drive. So then you are, it's just the music, it's just the lights, it's just the atmosphere. And then you are in charge of creating that moment and making it entertaining. And you're either responding to the cast members that are just there having a good time, that had the bubble wands, or you and Jacqueline were having a really cute moment of you guys were just bopping along to the music. You guys looked like Ramon and what's her name?
Flo.
That they just like, you want to go for a cruise, baby? Like you guys were just like kind of just bopping with the music. It looked really cute. I was like, oh, that's so adorable. But you wouldn't have that interaction in any of the other entertainment at the end of the night. And this was just something that they just turned on music and lights, just like you said.
Yeah. So I do think that it's funny how it's like everyone loves that. You know, people come specifically there to experience that. And, but it's like, so I, in some ways I'm like, is it that people need to be more in the moment, or is it that like Disney needs to just say, hey, we're going to create art that we know needs to exist in the form of shows, regardless of if it's like sound bitey or whether it makes the most sense for uploading videos on Instagram or something. It's like, you know, it's like looking at it instead of through metrics of like, what will people like instantly connect with in like 30 seconds? It's like, well, what's a good show that we can create? Let's just give someone creative reign over the show, let them make something wonderful and own it as a, you know, a piece of art, just like other shows are, seeing things more as a stage instead of a screen, you know, like we're talking about.
Now, I would argue that's my opinion for why I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm going to say it for the podcast. I probably will not make a video about it because I'm afraid I'll get canceled. But I liked Starlight better than Paint the Night. And I think some of it is because Starlight, the music in Starlight doesn't have lyrics. It's not the same. When can we do this again? Over and over again. It's not a party. And every float tells the story of a wish being granted. That's why there's no villains in this float. This is the hero having a wish in their heart and it coming true. And I feel like that's more, it's better projected, and then your emotions to each of the songs and how it changes with each story that's represented speaks differently to you. The princess float, the Moana float is beautiful, but instead of, I mean, the characters do talk sometimes, they talk a little bit, but it is you visualizing and seeing this beautiful sparkly float that doesn't have a lot of screens. It has a lot of lights, but mostly no screens on most of these. And that character and the music and is telling the story, and not so much these giant LED screens re-showing you on an iPad what's going on, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we've beat this dead horse long enough.
We really have. I know. And I'll touch on that real quick, because actually that does tie into this also. We went on a tangent about bathrooms in the last episode. Now we went on a tangent of entertainment differences. Yep. And how you need to be more in touch with your emotions. Get over it. And so another thing that I got to experience that sadly all did not was Oogie Boogie Bash over in Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And I will be going to Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party here very, very soon. And there were some things I thought were really, really cool. One of the things that was very entertaining was the diverse use of characters and how most characters that we don't see normally were there, like Ernesto de la Cruz. We saw Judge Doom from Roger Rabbit was there.
Ooh, some that's fun.
Oh, he was very spooky. He was very creepy. And even getting closer to Hades. And I was like, oh, hi, how are you? And because you can pass by them closer if you want to, and they can talk to you. At one point, I think the best line, though, and I got a video of it, was Judge Doom was giving a hard time to this guy that wasn't really dressed up, but was like hardcore recording Judge Doom. And the guy said something back to him, and he's like, yes, you also look like a cartoon that I drew with my left hand. And I was just like, no, dang. It was like so savage in the response. And me and Megan looked at each other, just jaw dropped. We're like, ah, amazing. Mm-hmm. So the like interactions like that were so, so cool. I loved the treat distribution and how every treat trail had multiple buckets and they had different things. They had Rice Krispie treats, they had cranberries, and then they also had candy. So I was very happy about that. I thought that was great. Something I did not love, though, was they didn't really have like fabulous shows or entertainment other than the parade. So Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party has the Hocus Pocus Villain Spectacular, which y'all is one of the best shows in Disney World. Like point blank. That's the reason why you go is for that show. Mm-hmm. And I try to see it in the beginning and at the end of the night for my Mickey's Not So Scary Party. We also have fireworks. We have Boo to You. And I've heard so many mixed emotions of people were like, oh, but there's more villains and there's more scary things in the Halloween version in Disneyland. But again, the music is also very much like a party. It is constantly going, where the Boo to You is more fun and it goes through the different phases of fall also. Because I mean, in Florida, we don't have fall, right? We have summer, little less summer, a lot of rain summer, 1-3 days of cold in the middle of February, and then that's it, right? So we have
depressing. You got to experience fall through a parade.
And we do. We literally have to experience fall through a parade. So our fall is manifested through the cowboy scene, and we have like a little fall segment. It's not just all villains. And our parade, I think, is actually a little bit longer. And then it highlights the other fun things about the fall season of like you have the Space Rangers, you have the candy section with Vanellope and everybody, you have the cowboys and the I want to call her Henrietta, but it's not Henrietta. The chicken? Yes. We have her in the barn. Usually it's either Goofy. Previous years has been Clarabelle out there leading the barnyard dance. Things that you would associate with fall. And then at the very end is where it gets spooky and the villains are. So it's like all the events leading up to the fall season. And then it ends with the actual Halloween night kind of vibe. I like that a lot. And I didn't mind the Oogie Boogie Parade, but I am true to Boo to You, y'all. I am so sorry. I love Boo to You.
Another point for Disney World on the show today.
I'm so sorry, y'all. I feel like we're just bashing Disneyland.
The past two episodes have just been, oh yeah, here's why Disney World's better. Other than we gave some points to Disneyland.
We
it was a compliment sandwich. Maybe it was a compliment like toast. Like the toast was the food starting off. We started off positive with the food and it just went downhill.
Well, I just think it makes it very apparent of, even though we are doing comparisons, we really probably shouldn't compare park to park because they are so different. And the guests that go to each park are so different. The cast members that work at each park are very, very different. And the things that are created to entertain those guests are different. So I think you get used to one perspective, like the Disney World perspective, we get used to that and we take it for granted. And then the same thing with Disneyland, they do the exact same thing. They see their park all the time and they're like, okay, no, that's mine. They claim ownership of it and that they're happy with that. So either both answers are not wrong is what I want to say. But
I don't know, but you're also like, I mean, if you're like the Murphy family from Tennessee, you know, and you're doing your one Disney trip of for the next 4 years,
right,
paying $3,000 for a trip, you want to go where you're getting the most value out of your money. And I mean, I do think like what we've touched on is like Disney World is kind of a better value, like for the average guest, for the average consumer, like Disney World is going to be a predominantly better experience for your money. You know, I think that's kind of what I'm getting out of this, right? You know, from the most
there's
part.
A little more for everyone, if that makes sense. Like there's, you can have, it can be fully immersive of doing multiple park days, because you need at least 5 days. If you're doing a full trip to Disney World and you want to feel like you're not missing out on too much, you have to at least have a full day for each park and then a rest day in between. So I would suggest 5 days. Disneyland, we got everything done in a day and a half. And we felt very accomplished even on that. And then we had a third day to go back and get all the things that we missed in between just because timing didn't work out. So I think it really depends on what you want out of your trip and what your expectation is. If you are looking for a true theme park and that has maybe better theme park food, Disneyland, that's fine. If you want to have a more removal from reality and can really go into resort mode, I would say Disney World.
Yeah,
would you agree?
That's a very good politician answer, Danielle.
You know, I have followers that represent both and also the parks outside of the U.S. and I can't wait to eventually experience those too, because I do think that will greatly change my opinions on some things in Disney World and in Disneyland and how they operate between those international parks too. So yeah, very, very good politician answer for me. Thank you. I'm ready to be the next Disney ambassador. Disney, you have my email. We'll go from there. All right. Well, I feel like we have ranted a good amount on this episode. So thank you again, everybody, for listening this far into the episode. We genuinely appreciate it. I will be sharing some more things that happened over in Disneyland on my socials, over on the TikTok, Instagram, the Facebook page, and over on the YouTube. I do have a long form YouTube video that I need to share over there whenever it gets uploaded. I actually have a couple videos. Some more fun things are going to be coming and being announced here soon. So pay attention for more episodes. And anything else, guys, to add?
Be sure to like, comment, subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. If you're listening on Spotify, you can leave a comment now if you want to tell us how wrong we are about Disneyland. Or if you want to send us an email to tell us how terrible our kids are.
Because the word counts won't fit. Please
exactly.
Send it over.
Send it over to podcast@thedapperdanielle.com. We would love to get your listener mail. Send us your cast member stories. If you want to share those, we're going to have a segment where we talk about cast member experiences. We're going to keep you anonymous. We're not going to share your name. We just want to hear like your greatest experiences, like making magic, really like creating magical moments, or we want to hear your horror stories. We want to hear your terrible interactions.
As long as you don't give away too many information bits about the actual situation so people can't like Google it
names.
And find the police report or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Mm. I'm sure people will figure out. I mean, unless you just really want people to know who you are, like you can share it online afterwards and be like, this is my story, you know.
Yeah,
we'll keep it anonymous, but you know, that's your prerogative at the end of the day. So anyway, yes, podcast@thedapperdanielle.com. reach out to us there. Be sure to leave us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to this podcast. That helps us out tremendously. Leave a comment, subscribe to the YouTube. I believe we have a Patreon that we're launching
and we have
launched already by the time this comes out.
And we have some polls posted up there from the last episode. And I guess, we're going to do another poll post, or I want to know your opinion over on the Patreon page, is do you have a preference on a favorite nighttime entertainment offering from Disneyland? Do you like World of Color? Is there a version of World of Color you like? That's going to be over on the Patreon, and I want some opinions over there. So definitely go check it out.
All right.
Perfect. Well, with that being said, until next time, thanks for watching again, and we'll see you around. Night-night, sleep tight, dream of churros tonight.